I know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off a scene's
party. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal. Welcome back. Took 2 months off from podcasting. I take a little break in April and May from a lot of the stuff I do, clear my brain, recharge, maybe that's the best way to say it. And so I do the podcast by seasons. I used to do that when I was doing the podcast in like 2013, 14, 15. Stopped doing it for several years because things got too busy. Started doing it again because this is my job now. And so this will be the first episode of the next season, and this is going to be a summer podcast series for the next 8 weeks. So on the next 8 Mondays, one of these episodes will come out, and I'm going to start by explaining what the plan is, and then we'll get to this week's episode. So the plan, and this wasn't my idea, this was the idea of Johnny from the Boardroom podcast. The idea is to do a deep dive into the history of Illinois basketball. And for me to be able to join in those discussions, it needed to start in 1983, because that's when my fandom as a 10-year-old kid really began. I was aware of Illinois basketball, and my dad was a fan, and like I've mentioned before, I think the 1980 Missouri game was my first real memory of a game. Anyway, 83 season, I started paying attention. 83, 84 season, I was rabid, insane fan, to where, you know, I'd ask my dad for the sports page from the St. Louis Globe Democrat newspaper that we had delivered, and I would cut out stories if they had a story on Illini basketball or Illini football, and I became that kind of 11, 12-year-old fan, led to who I am today and what I'm doing today. But that was my start in 83, and so I figured the best way to do this would be to do 8 episodes, and for each episode, do 5-year periods of Illinois basketball. So this one will be 83 to 87. So basically the 82-83 season all the way through the 86-87 season. And then 5-year periods after that. So 88 to 92, 93 to 97. You get the drill until the final episode 8 weeks from now will be 18 to 22, basically what we just watched, the Underwood era, basically. So I'm going to have a different guest for each of the 8 weeks. So I guess I won't tell you who some of the guests will be. I'll just let it come out each Monday. So my plan is to publish these each of the next 8 Mondays. And so you can, if your era is in there and you just want to listen to it, you can kind of figure out those 5-year increments. If you want to listen to, I don't know, 98 to 02, obviously that will come in line, 4 weeks from now or whatever. So we're going to start. My guest for this one is Lauren Tate. I figured there was no better person to go through, 80s Illinois basketball than to go through it with the legend. So he and I set this up late last week. I will say this one is a little hurried, only because we were going to do it at my house, and then my wife had something for work of a big conference call or something, and I didn't want to be bringing Tate in and out in the middle of her calls that afternoon. So we moved it to his house. I got there a little late. He had to get to the radio station. So, we still were able to dive deeply into Illini basketball through that period. But, as you'll hear, we kind of rushed through a couple things. I wish we could have paused and got into them a little deeper, but we were a bit on a time constraint. So, apologies for that. That's my fault. We should have set a time where we had a lot more time to go through a lot more, but we did record, 75 minutes of digging through Illinois basketball from 83 to 87. And we did land on a theme. Like, this is what Illinois basketball was during this period. And I had kind of forgotten about some of the things. I had blocked out some of the tournament losses. My memory of that Alabama tournament loss is very, very fuzzy. I have this traumatic memory of Austin Peay in 87, but some of these others, even, you know, we started to touch on 88 and that loss, even though 88 isn't part of the years we're discussing here, but there is a definite theme to Big Ten basketball in the 80s and Illinois basketball as it was building. Because as you remember, so the setup here, and as you'll hear, Tate will discuss this as my answer to the first question. Like, this was kind of the big rebuild of Illinois basketball. So back, you know, three Final Fours, the 40s and 50s, and a really solid team. 60s had a, you know, off and on good year, and 60, I can't remember. I won't say it right now. I won't get it wrong. But then slush fund scandal happens. Things kind of fall apart. They're kind of somewhat built back together with Nick Weatherspoon in early 70s, and then there's the 1 year of Gene Bartow before he left again for UCLA, and then basically Henson had to build it from the ground up in the late 70s, and we get to the early 80s, and it's starting to go somewhere, and, well, we'll pick it up from there. So that's the background. What the mid-80s were was the building, you know, a near Final Four, but also the building of this program that we know today. And obviously it culminated in the Final Four in 89, but, you know, all that we were going through the mid-80s was building to that. So I figured that's the best place to start. It's where I remember Illinois basketball. It's where I can add things that I recall from those seasons. And obviously Lauren Tate was basically at every one of these games. He was, you know, we're playing in a tournament in Hawaii, not the Maui Invitational. The other one, as he'll describe, was partially outdoors, kind of almost in an airplane hangar kind of thing. There's a lot of fun stories here. So I won't spoil any more of it. We'll get right to it. Here is my discussion with Lauren Tate discussing 1982-83 through 1986-87 Illinois basketball. Okay, first off, just thank you for joining me. What I'm going to do here, I'm going through like 5 year chunks of the season.
Okay.
Who better to go through 83 to 87 than you? I thought about Megan giving you like the late 60s through the 80s or something, and we could go back and talk Harv Schmidt or something, but I won't take your brain back that far. We'll just go back 83 to 87. So just in general, before we start, because I'll have specific discussion questions for each of these seasons. Like, what, when you think of that era, 83 to 87, we'll call it the Bruce Douglas era, the Altenberger era, because he was there most of those seasons. Like, what's your thought about Illinois basketball those seasons?
The first thing I think about is how they got there. And when Lou Henson came, they didn't have any players out of Chicago. They were in a recruiting slump. And they worked through Levi Cobb and Eddie Johnson and Mark Smith out of Peoria. And the next thing you know, they had some good players coming. And Quincy was having a tremendous run of high school basketball, mm-hmm. win a state championship. Mm-hmm. And Bruce Douglas was probably the most efficient all-around player in that group. And they were able to stay in Chicago with Ephraim Winters and George Montgomery. And then, of course, adding Bruce Douglas and Altenberger out of Peoria. That was the nucleus of a team that really basically led into the Flying Illini. I mean, they were the predecessors to the Flying Illini, and there was a real build-up to get to them. And,
right.
And 1984, they had a great chance to win the national championship, except they had to play Kentucky at Kentucky, as you know. And,
right.
And that was a stumbling block there, plus the fact that Ephraim Winters was injured and almost unable to play in that game.
Yeah. Now, do you remember, recruiting wasn't the same at the time as far as like how it was covered, or, you know, people know, oh my gosh, they got, you know, Arkansas got these 3 5 stars next year. They're going to be really good. People didn't project seasons like that. It was more programs that are on the rise and that type of thing. Did you know, I mean, you're covering the team at the time. Did you know, you know, Ephraim Winters and Bruce Douglas are really good. Altenburger can really shoot it. Did you sense that next step coming?
Oh, yeah, but I think Harper was a big part of it, too, along with Tucker. When they got the two guys, when they got those two, Harper out of Florida and Tucker out of junior college, there was a the squad was deep.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody wasn't on the team every year, but they had super talent. And I thought when Douglas and Harper played together,
yeah,
that was about as good a pair of defensive guards and playmakers as you would ever have.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of the leading up to these years. So there was the Eddie Johnson years, basically. Mm-hmm. Kind of he somewhat passes the baton to Derek Harper,
mm-hmm.
is kind of how it works. So we'll start here then with the 82-83 season. So Harper's still there. He's a junior. This would be Ephraim Winters was in that class 82. And as I recall, I think he had a really big McDonald's All-American game. Like the McDonald's All-American game was like 2 years old at the time.
As a high school player, Winters was very, very highly regarded.
Yes.
And was never quite that good. I mean, he was never an All-American or anything of that nature. Yeah. I don't think he was all Big Ten maybe. But
right.
But he was a good solid center. And he and George worked together. He and George Montgomery.
Yeah.
And in the 82-83 season was the year that Harper and Douglas played together.
Yeah.
And you can't judge them by their points. Points. I mean, Harper averaged, 15, and Douglas averaged 9.
Yeah.
But they were far more valuable than that. And this was a team that could have gone a long way, but they just – I can't explain what happened. Harper, I think, my memory tells me, in the 52-49 loss to Utah in the tournament, the first game in the tournament – I don't think he scored a basket.
Really?
I think he was 0-for-7 from the field.
Wow.
I mean, you just can't – the things that happened to Illinois in the tournament – now, I just mentioned that they scored 49 in that game. The next year, they scored 53 against Georgia Tech. The year after that, they scored 56 against Alabama. This is a team
yeah.
That averaged, you know, normally shot in the, scored in the 70s.
Yeah.
Normally.
Mm-hmm.
But in those tournament games, they just fell flat.
I mean, it one sounds a lot another. Like this year, right? Like,
yes.
What was it, 54 yes, against Chattanooga?
Exactly, the last 2 years.
53 against...
Loyola wasn't much yeah, better.
Right, right, right.
So I can't explain those things, but
yeah.
But I do. I will tell you that even if you go all the way to the Villanova game, which was, to me, the most crushing defeat I ever saw an Illinois team take, maybe,
yeah,
because they were 10 points ahead and had the game in hand, and it was a really good team.
Yeah.
Really good team. And, you know, that was Anderson and Battle and Blackwell and Gill and Hamilton, all those great players. And they missed 10 free throws, I think, in the last closing minutes and
yeah.
missed them in pairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody took turns missing.
Okay, so let's zoom into 83 then.
Okay.
Let's talk. So that was that team. So the reason I chose this year is because for – when I was a little kid, this is the first team I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was a fanatic fan for the 83-84 team. I remember the Kentucky game. I can tell you about the travel that wasn't called. I can, you know, that started my fandom. But 83 is when, like, my dad went to the Bragging Rights game, and I remember, like, starting to pay attention, and, like, I think that's the year we got cable, and that might have been the first year when, like, local cable access would have some of the games that weren't on, you know, whatever CBS or however they were broadcast. But I do remember that season more than I remember other years. So Harper and Douglas are fitting it together. I guess your main scorers that year are, you know, Harper's your go-to guy, but you can see the future of the Douglas and Winters team kind of thing. I guess, was Anthony Welch there?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the number three scorer on the team.
Yeah.
This was a good balanced team. There was
no
sensational high scorer, but mm-hmm. as I mentioned before, Harper averaged 15 points a game that year. But Harper, this was Harper's junior year, and he did not come back.
Right.
And that's the story of Illinois' problems down through the years. If you go on back to the 89 when Nick Anderson didn't return, I mean, Illinois, just when they got to a point, if he stays one more year, you know,
yep.
you think, whoa, oh boy, how good would he be? But
yep.
he turned pro, and I still remember some things about that, you know, that we weren't aware of what was happening.
Uh-huh.
But that's always the case. I mean, the players are talking to agents, they're talking to their family, they're talking to people other than us,
right.
And there are things going on behind there that we weren't aware.
Right.
But this was a team that started out very well, and I mean, after a early loss to Vanderbilt, I see they won like, you know, something like 8 out of the next 9 games, and
They
had it rolling pretty good, except for Kentucky. Kentucky knocked them off.
Yep.
But
do you remember that first loss to Kentucky at Lexington?
I don't remember much about it. No, I don't.
Yeah, that game doesn't stick out to me. They lost. I'm looking at the schedule.
76-57. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kentucky was number 2 at the time, and this Illinois team was not ranked. You know, this was a team that was coming on that the nation wasn't aware, and they didn't prove themselves either. They finished 11-7 in the Big Ten and then lost to Utah, so they never got into the real the most exciting, the most, you know, the finish of the season, and we didn't have a Big Ten tournament in those days, was the final Minnesota game where, you know, Harper held the ball for the last shot in overtime and hit a three-pointer to win the game.
Yeah. Okay, so we get to that tournament. They were, what was the seed that year? It's the game is in Boise. Did you go to this game? Do you
know?
Yes,
I did. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're in Boise.
I can't explain how bad we were.
Yeah.
And almost won the game. It was 52-49, but
yeah.
It was just like we couldn't make a basket.
Yeah. Yeah.
49 points.
Yeah. So you're coming off. I see there was this road win at number 14, Ohio State. You just beaten Wisconsin and Minnesota to end out the season. Oh, mm-hmm. Minnesota was double overtime. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
And then you get to this game against Utah, and it's just everybody's flat.
Yeah, and again, we had seen flaws during the course of the season where you could see that they might not play well, but I think 49 points, it was probably the low point in the season. As I'm looking down, we had 49 against Minnesota, too, and a 75-49 loss at Minnesota in our first Big Ten game.
Mm-hmm.
But and started the season with 47. So we started the season with 47 against Vanderbilt, finished it with 49 against Utah.
So that,
if you don't reach 50, you don't win.
Yes. So that Utah team went on to beat – I looked that up yesterday. They went on to beat UCLA in the next round. Mm-hmm. So I guess that was the 7-10 game. It was facing UCLA, was the 2 seed, but that was the region won by NC State barely. That was their long run of, you know, win by 2, win by 1, win by 2, and rolled all the way to the title. Mm-hmm. Did you have any sense that that team could have done any damage in the tournament, or was it, hey, if they beat Utah, they're going to have to face super powerful UCLA.
I think we were just playing them one at a time, hoping you could go as far as possible.
Yeah.
This wasn't a national championship team or anything of that nature, but
yeah.
It was a good enough team. This team could have gone further than it did, obviously.
Yeah.
But the thing about tournament games is you have to win some close games, and Illinois hadn't never been very successful at that. If it's a close game, you just hold your breath.
Yes, 100%. Okay, so that last question for the 82-83 season, that 82 class, where would you put that 82 class? So it's the recruiting class was Ephraim Winters, Bruce Douglas, Doug Altenberger, and who else was in that class? I feel like there would be I just looked this up last night. Hold on, I've got it here. The other freshman was Reggie.
Maybe Mintz.
Reggie Woodward?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, and Mintz. That's who it was. Yes, Scott Mintz.
Yeah.
So, you know,
probably.
Those we're going to say a lot of those names a lot as we go through the following four
seasons.
They'd
be top half dozen in history, probably.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah.
I mean, to me,
it wasn't the best ever, but it wasn't, you know, it was way up there.
Yes. I think to me there's that class, there's the 86 class with Anderson, Bardo, Gill.
That was awfully good.
There's the, they're not all the same recruiting class, but the 99 class, which had Griffin coming in from JUCO. It had Brian Cook coming, you know, straight from high school as a 5-star. You had Frank Williams becoming eligible. Mm-hmm. That was his first year.
Yeah.
That was a impact class. Obviously, Darren and James Augustine was a class.
Mm-hmm.
And then, gosh, it's hard to say. I mean, Io is his own class, but you also had Feliz in there. You had Griffin. You had Georgie. You know, Curbelo and Miller looked like it was a big class, and now
what happened?
Neither is here, you know. Like, if all three of those guys stay, you'd look back at Curbelo, Miller, Hawkins and be like, wow, that's up there in the top five classes. But again, we're in a new world now. But yeah, you would say that was Lou's, I mean, was that his second best class?
Well, maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, it was right there with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think so.
Because 86 was Nick Anderson, Kendall Gill,
oh, that's
Bardo,
that's
Larry
group.
Smith. Yeah.
Yeah, and right behind came Liberty, and you know that was a
yep.
That was a good era when Illinois had everything going until the Deion Thomas thing happened.
Yep.
And then you know they lost out right there.
Right.
Set them back. I mean, yep. Congratulations, Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, I should have you doing the years of 1990 so that we could talk about that. Okay, so let's move forward to 83-84. So this had to be the first. Okay, so I'm a 10, 11-year-old kid, and I'm totally into Illinois basketball now, and, you know, I want to watch any game I can, and I'm begging my dad to take me up to games and everything else. This was, like, the first really on-the-radar year for Illinois basketball, wouldn't you say? I mean, obviously it ends with in the Elite Eight and nearly in the Final Four, but wouldn't this have been the first year that there was kind of national hype?
Yes.
Although
they weren't ranked at the start of the season.
Okay.
But they did finally, they moved up and they got all the way up to number six. But the thing that happened the year before was Lou was trying to decide what to do with Bontemps and Richardson because it didn't look like either one was going to play. There was no point in putting them both on the bench, so he gave them a choice. And Kevin Bontemps and Richardson were not going to play in 83. They had Harper there and Douglas, but the next year, with Harper turning pro, Lou had given his players an opportunity to determine whether either one wanted a redshirt that previous year. Bontemps elected to play. Richardson sat out the 83 season and saved his final year of eligibility for the 84 season. And he fit right in where Harper had been. Different kind of player now, not as flamboyant, but a very good shooter from the perimeter, and he had all these other guys that were quality players, and he just, like I say, he fit right in. Douglas was a tremendous all-around player. He had 177 assists and 73 steals. He did everything except shoot from outside. We didn't have a three-point shot then anyway, and he didn't take that kind of shot.
Right.
And you had Montgomery coming in to, you know, It took George was a big guy and heavy, and it took him a year or two to really get in top playing shape. So you had a front line of winners in Montgomery plus Altenberger, who was healthy. Yep. So yes, it was a really solid team that was ready to make a run.
Yeah, and you had some freshman minutes from Tony Weisinger, who had come in from Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
You had Scott Mintz was probably your top guy off the bench, right? He was like the
in the post. He was a backup postman, yeah.
Backup in the post. And so you had all these, every piece is fitting in. Now, is that the year Welch was injured? I can't remember. I feel like that was the year Anthony Welch had to sit out. My memory of that is the following season in 85, 84-85, Sports Illustrated had Illinois number 2 in the preseason rankings right behind Georgetown. Mm-hmm. I still have that Sports Illustrated somewhere in a box because, again, as a kid, I'm obsessed with this. And I just remember thinking that, like, okay, you know, this and that. You maybe lost Quinn Richardson, but now Anthony Welch is coming back from injury. He's going to be the key piece. And then that was going to be the team. So I remember the hype around 85, maybe even more than I remember the 84 team.
Well, they were ranked in the AP poll number 2 going in 85.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, this was a really quality team that just lost some close games. I never forget when Lou said he'd never go back and play Loyola at the Rosemont again because they actually scored a basket when the game was over to win. I'll swear that the clock had already gone off, but in those days we didn't have any way of checking it.
Yeah.
And Illinois lost that game 63-62.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was a tough conference race. They finished 12-6. Now they were defending champs, having gone 15-3 in 84.
Right.
The 84 team was the best team.
Yes.
As it turns out.
Yes.
And
Yeah, and it wasn't, I mean, so you, like you said, 84 wasn't ranked preseason. And then there was the Kentucky game in December. Mm-hmm. And again, you'll remember much better than I, but my memory of that is that Kentucky game that they barely lost kind of like put them on the map.
Well, it was 56-54, but the reason it was on the map was because around Christmas time and heavy snow and the officials couldn't get there.
That's right.
So they took three of Charlie Dew and two other guys out of Scott Mintz. I'm sorry, I got the name wrong, but they took three officials out of the stands, and it was a well-officiated game.
Yes.
And it came down to a last shot by Kentucky that went in, and they won 56-54.
Yes. And I think it was... Wasn't it after that loss that they – so they had started
– Kentucky was number two, by the way.
Yes, yes. So they started 8-0, lost that game, but then were mm-hmm. ranked because they nearly beat number
right.
two.
Exactly.
And then beat Missouri in the mm-hmm. bragging rights game and yep. now in the polls and ready to roll.
Yep.
And then, you know, as many Illini fans will know, like 84 was the Big Ten title year.
You know that Illinois between – January the 7th and February the 2nd had four overtime games.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go through that. You might remember some
well,
of them.
Well, I'll run them down real quick. Mm-hmm. At Wisconsin, they won 63-62 in overtime.
And that was back when – that was when Wisconsin was – like well, they mostly horrific.
Yeah, they were not.
They went 1949 to 1994 – without going to the tournament.
Right.
They went, you know, 50-some years. So.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And then at Indiana was the very next game. They lost 73-68 to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then on January 28, Michigan at home, they won 75-66, four overtimes. And guess how many minutes Bruce Douglas played?
Let's see. Would it be 40, 50, 60 minutes?
It would be 60.
Wow.
Even goodness. 60.
Goodness. And okay, tell me about that game, because I have no memory of that
too
game.
Many, too many
too many games sca- between there
too
and
many
here.
Scary finishes. I don't know. Well, I couldn't tell you one overtime from the other, but
yeah.
I mean, it's four overtimes. It's the longest game I think Illinois has ever played uh-huh. in basketball, at least.
Yes.
They go nine overtimes in football, but
right.
But and then they went to Iowa, and they won 50. So they won 54-52. They won three of the four games.
Yes.
Of the overtime games. That was a double overtime at Iowa.
Yes.
And then they went from there, and they by the way, they needed help. You'll have to help me on this, but they won the Big Ten championship. I think they tied with
Purdue.
Purdue, because Indiana beat Purdue the final game, right?
Correct.
And to knock
correct.
Purdue back into a tie with us.
I believe that's correct. Let me look up the date of that Purdue game.
My memory's not real good on that, but I know we needed something good to happen, all right? Just as we needed Wisconsin to lose to Nebraska this past year, Illinois needed needed that game to turn out the right way. And Illinois finished with a four-game winning streak against Ohio State, Indiana, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. So that was a good finish. And went right into the tournament, beat Villanova, beat Maryland, and ran up against Kentucky in that game that is still talked about because they had to beat Kentucky at Kentucky. That rule then since was changed where no team could host.
Yes.
In the Big Ten.
Yes. So... you know, that's obviously the game that everyone will think about. So let's just start with the Dickie Beal travel. Like, do you remember it happening? Was that? I mean, it was right in front of the scorers table.
Mid-court.
Were you on that side?
I was on the same side he was.
Yeah, yeah. So did mm-hmm. you like? Did you react? Were you doing radio that year? Or
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So do you remember reacting? Like, was it?
Might have traveled.
Yeah.
I don't think I was outrageous about it. I was.
Yeah.
I thought he did, but you know, I didn't probably couldn't have made the call.
Yes. Was there?
Once we looked back at it, we saw it.
Was there like outrage in the? I guess in the arena, it's Kentucky fans. So since it was a home game, it's like mm-hmm. somebody traveling on the road. There's not going to be. you know, did Lou talk about it after the game? Was it, I mean, among the fans watching at home, it's become this legendary thing. If that travel is called, Illinois gets the ball down one or whatever.
You're talking about something that that people could see a second time at home.
Yes.
And we didn't get to see a second time at the game.
Yes.
All right, so I wasn't aware that it was that egregious.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so what about the...
But I know Bruce was complaining about it after the game.
Right. What about the fact of having to go on the road? Do you remember it being, you know, Illini fans remember it as like the long list of rules that Illinois basketball has changed for people. So there's, you know, the Miami game in 2013. Now there's the Illinois rule. You can review plays that go off someone's hand in the final minute, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, all these.
So the Michigan football game.
Correct. Know. Right. Michigan football game started the path for instant replay in college football. So do you remember the outrage at the time of having to play at Kentucky?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we knew we were in trouble right away.
Yeah.
I mean, but they were second in the nation, weren't they?
Yes. I mean, they were when they played in December. I'm not sure about.
They were number three as of that moment. So they started out number two, and they wound up number three.
Okay.
No, you know, if you go to – look.
Yeah.
If you go back to the 1950s, I'm a freshman at the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Illinois is playing Kentucky in the Final Four.
Yeah. Yeah.
The game is a 2-point game. Sundridge's got the ball. He's my roommate. He's driving for the basket. He doesn't get it, and the game ends. That's how close we were to beating Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
It's been that way all the way through.
Yeah.
Here I am 60, 70 years later, and we still can't beat Kentucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really hard, and that's why the first game I covered at Kentucky, Illinois won a game there in 1966 at the beginning of that season, and it was a tremendous win at Kentucky. I don't know that Illinois has ever won at Kentucky any other time, but I know that Harry Combs' biggest concern, the thing that upset him the most, was the fact that they couldn't beat Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. So, you know, again, I'm carrying things forward to now, but you know, it'd be rare.
There's a history there.
Yes, but there's a history there, and even up to last year when both Antigua and Chin Coleman leave for Kentucky, you know, because I don't have that history going back like you do, I have a, you know, my Kentucky memories are solely focused on this game in 84. And Dickie Beal traveled, and Illinois should have won. And if it wasn't played there, we would have gone to the Final Four. And it changed the rule of playing on the road and all of that. But
let me take you back two more years from 51, because 51 was my freshman year.
Uh-huh.
49, we lost to Kentucky in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm. So it was 49 and 51 in the Final Four was 51, Kentucky.
51, we lost to Kentucky. And then the 49 team was with Edelman and Erickson and Osterkorn, Green, Sunderlage, Marks. That was a really good Illinois team. They were 10-2 in the Big Ten and lost to Kentucky when Kentucky was ranked number one. And 2 years later, where do you think Kentucky was ranked? Number one.
Uh-huh.
It would, I mean, at some point you would begin to, you know, the Kentucky thing weighs on you.
Yep.
And so all these years later,
Yep.
You say, were we concerned going to Kentucky? Oh, yeah. Plenty of concern. And the other part was, Winters was hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Spent the night trying to get his leg ready so he could even play in the game, and he couldn't jump.
Yep. Yep.
It's always something.
Would that happen in the Sweet 16 game is when he got hurt?
I don't know.
Or was it a practice?
I don't know when he got hurt. Now, I can't remember that. But I'm going to say that he got hurt in the previous game. That's what I think, but I may be wrong on that. I don't know.
Okay.
I just know that Rod Cardinal was up with him. I think it was Rod. Was he here then? Doggone it. So many years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe. But in any case, I know that they worked with him all throughout that night and got him ready for the game. He averaged 15 points a game for Illinois. He was a key player. He was their leading rebounder. He wasn't the leader, was he? He had Montgomery, he had 224, and he had 205. But he was the best inside big man we had at that time.
Mm-hmm. I remember Purdue getting upset that year as well,
because they got upset a lot in the tournament.
Yeah, yeah, that was the Memphis State. I think that was the Keith Lee team, maybe. But they lost to Memphis State in the first round. I think they lost in I guess it wasn't 3-14 at the time because it wasn't. Was that the year it expanded to 64? I can't remember. Now I'm gonna have to look
Gene Cady had many championships in the Big Ten and just couldn't get to the final. Never made the Final Four.
Yep. Yeah, they lost to, let's see, they lost in the 3-6 game to Memphis State, 66-48 that year.
Let me ask you a question. Has Purdue ever made the Final Four since Rick Mount?
I mean, was that 80? Like 80 is
no, no. Rick Mount was a 67, 68, okay. 69. So, 69 was the year I think they were in the Final Four.
Yes.
It might be a year off.
They made it in 80 when Iowa did as well, I think.
Okay.
I think.
That's right. Right before Katie took over.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
They King made it, was the coach, wasn't he?
Yes. It was the Final Four was like Louisville and Iowa and Purdue and I can't remember the fourth. But yes, they. So their two Final Fours are 69 and 80, but they've had, they've had this long.
It's 42 years of good teams.
Yes. I mean, even, look, the 2019 team, they're winning against Virginia, and they get a tap-back free throw that's thrown to a guy who, you know, barely touches the ball, almost tips it in from 10 feet away to send it to overtime, and they lose to Virginia in overtime. Like, Purdue fans have this, when are we going to get back to the Final Four? And, you know, the big dog year in 94, they didn't do it. And Roy Hairston was going to get them there. And then, you know, they have all these years up to and including 2019. And they've just never been able to get back to that Final Four. So who would have been so who was the guy for Purdue in 1980 then? Like, who would have been there?
Not the big dog.
No.
He was much later.
Yes. Let me see. I can just get there from this page. I don't know.
When you tell me, I'll remember. But I don't have a recollection of the players on that 80 Purdue team.
Yeah. Okay. Well, while I'm looking that up, let's just talk about that. Let's just wrap the 84 season here. So, finally got a Big Ten title, hung the banner, and there was the devastation. Excuse me, in the tournament of losing to Kentucky. But there were a fair number of players coming back, and Douglas was coming back, and Altenberger was coming back, and you know, what was the thought? Do you remember going into the 85 season? Because I still have my Sports Illustrated when they were ranked number two. It was like, wow, this is, you know,
well,
like,
my
team is somehow number two.
Based on returning players, it looked like another great season. I mean, that, you know, as you pointed out, I don't know exactly what happened toward the end of the season, but they started off terrific, and they lost a game to Alabama Birmingham at Anchorage. I know, I see that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 wins out of the first 12. And then I mentioned the game at Loyola that they lost on a last tip shot, and then they start the Big Ten with losses to Minnesota and Iowa. I guess at that point we realized that things were going to be rough, and they finished 26-9 for the season, 12-6 in the Big Ten. It was a good team, just not quite as good as we had hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had really high hopes for that team, and by the end of the season, they were ranked 16, 18, 14. They had fallen into the teens, and it was a team that just didn't quite live up to expectations. Now, I can't tell you why. I mean, I don't know why. What's the difference between that team and the year before? Basically, all they lost was Richardson. I mean,
yep.
It just doesn't make any sense. But again, Altenberger played. Altenberger played all 35 games, so he was healthy. Welch played all 35. Winters, Douglas, both played all 35. Now, Montgomery evidently got hurt because he only played 23. And Ken Norman came on the team that year and averaged 7 points or so.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Can that be right?
Norman...
Well, there's a Norman listed here in 29 games. I'm not.
Now I'm going to have to look that up. I found the name from Purdue 80. It was Joe Barry Carroll.
Yeah.
That was the guy who led them to the Final Four.
Yeah, Kenny Norman played all 3 years. The second and third years, he was off the charts. I mean, as a senior, he was a, you know, one of the best big men in the country, and a great rebounder, high scoring, high percentage scorer, but that's going ahead. As I said, the 87 team that lost to Austin Peay was an awfully good team.
Yep.
But
yeah, I remember.
But
so
these are all equal. You start talking about 83, 84, 85, 86, and 87. Those are all really good teams.
Yes. The thing, so I always equate that 85 team with, say, 2002 and maybe even this past season of, okay, you have a really good run, you get a lot of players back, and then there's just weird stuff all year, and there's injuries, and there's, it just didn't happen, and it just didn't click. You know, I think in 2002, I think Illinois was number three preseason. You know, Frank Williams is coming back. Brian Cook's coming back. You still have all this. You have the preseason player of the year, preseason coach of the year. You know, 02 was going to be like, okay, fine, they got to Elite Eight. Now it's time for a possible championship. And just never happened. And it sounds like my recollection of 85, and again, I'm the kid who's got the Sports Illustrated by his bed that says we're number two preseason next to Georgetown. But, you know, the 85 was just that same kind of like, we were going to win the Big Ten. Nope, we fell short to Michigan. And, oh, we're going to, nope, just didn't get there. So what do you have any memory of, like, what it was that didn't click that year?
We had a lot of big slow guys.
Yeah.
We had Montgomery. We had Winters. We had Mintz. We had Welch, who wasn't fast. Mm-hmm. This was not a great athletic team. Altenberger, Douglas was not a great athlete, not a great jumper. I just think that maybe, you know, Illinois had a really good, solid team, but mm-hmm. lacking the athleticism that we think we're going to have next season.
Yep.
You know, and yep. at the wings and at the point. Douglas was not a shooter.
Yep,
and he averaged 7.9 points, 8 points a game that year, and Illinois didn't have a player who averaged 12 mm-hmm. that season, and I think it's because, first of all, the 3-point shot wasn't in yet, so Altenberger was limited that way,
mm-hmm.
and by the you know his first the 3-point shot came in 2 years later,
mm-hmm.
and so I think the answer to your question is we just didn't have enough quickness and speed.
Yep. Yep.
We had big guys and not a you know, no dashing, no Harper.
Yep. And I remember that recruiting class being touted as the big guys because that had mm-hmm. Jens Kujawa and it had good old Olaf Blob, only mm-hmm. for 1 year, right? Like his brother went to Indiana.
Mm-hmm. His brother was a player.
Yes. And Olaf was just a 7-footer who – whose brother played.
Wasn't very good.
Right. But yes, I remember, like, you know, the hype going into that season was not only is Winters back and Douglas is back and Big George is back and Altenberger and you got Tony Weisinger as a sophomore now. And, you know, there was all that hype and number two preseason. But then there was also this, like, oh, they got a 7-footer from Taylorville. They got a 7-footer from Charleston. Like, you know, they brought in the European big men, and they're just going to, you know, that was the hype going into that year. And then, I guess, I mean, Jens did play. You know, he did eventually get there. Like, he contributed. Olaf Blob was only, like, what, 1 year and then gone?
Yeah, well, Olaf Blob was not much of a factor. But mm-hmm. Jens, there will be people that will tell you this, that the reason Illinois was so good in 89 is Jens didn't come back. That forced him to play Hamilton at center all the time. And Hamilton wasn't a great player, but he was elastic.
Yes.
He was long and he could jump and he was very athletic. And Jens was pretty...
rebound like a guy 6 inches taller than him, basically.
And yep. Jens didn't give you that quickness.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as we go back to the 85 team, I think that clearly to me is what was missing.
Yep.
And it was a team that Lou knew how to coach those kind of teams, but
yep.
But there were other teams that came in that were more quicker and outran Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Now, did get to the Sweet 16, so mm-hmm. You know, they were you know, end of the year number two in the Big Ten. So it's, you know, it's disappointing, but they were still 12-6 in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it's...
And, you know, finished second to Michigan that year. Won the first round game against Northeastern, beat Georgia in the second round, setting up this game with, what was it, a 3-2 game? A 3-seed, 2-seed game with Georgia Tech, I think. I got to remember.
I don't know.
Was it a 3? I think it was. I think we were a 3-seed and Georgia Tech was a 2-seed.
Well, Georgia Tech was ranked number 6 in the nation, so that would make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and Illinois was a 12, ranked 12, so Illinois was an underdog in the game and played like it.
Yep. Do you remember that? I just remember they couldn't score.
Just another game where Illinois couldn't make shots.
Yep. And that was...
Now that you bring this up, I'm going to go back and look at our shooting in all those games that Illinois lost in the tournament.
Yep.
Because Illinois's got a history of losing close games and low-scoring games. And and I just remember game after game, and you'd go in there, and I'd get tied on the sideline watching it.
Yes. Who was... Let me see if I can find it. Who was that? Oh, that was the John Sally Mark Price team. That's right. So that was a really good...
Yeah.
That was a really good Georgia Tech team.
Sure.
Let's see. They ended up losing to Georgetown in the regional final in the next game.
Mm-hmm.
So they beat Illinois 61-53 and then lost to Georgetown. Let's see, 85 is when Georgetown went on to win it all, right? So, you know, if Illinois would have gotten past Georgia Tech, it would have been the facing the eventual winner. But... yeah, any like that was again. I always equate 85 with 02 of like, oh, it's a satisfactory season in 02. Got to the Sweet 16 and lost in the Sweet 16. It was, you know, had a chance to maybe beat Kansas and Brian Cook missed a three. You know, had a decent chance in this Georgia Tech game, but Mark Price and John Sally were too much. You know, what do you remember about, you know, coming out of that season, like number two preseason, you end in the Sweet 16, you feel like you fell a little short, but you know, maybe you hit the mark.
Well, coming out of the season, you know, you got Winters and Douglas back again,
mm-hmm.
and we know they're winners, although they're maybe not at the ultimate level. But Weisinger was coming up, and I think then Welch was back, and then Ken Norman was coming aboard that year, and as you know, Norman turned out to be a terrific basketball player, and he led the team in scoring in 1986 with Winters and Douglas on that team.
And
he didn't take a lot of shots to do it.
Yeah. And there wasn't much drop-off in preseason hype because number seven preseason going into 85-86.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess some – who had gone? I guess Big George had graduated. I can't remember who else left. But, yes, you still have that core.
Well,
of...
Altenberger.
Oh, that's right. Altenberger got injured, right?
Was injured that year and didn't play again until 87. But what you're talking about is a whole series of teams, one after another, that had a real chance to reach, let's say, the Final Four. None of them looked to me like NCAA champions, but they were. If you get there, you got a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And Illinois has just too many times reached that level and then just have been able to take the next step. Maybe it took an upset to do it. Mm-hmm. Other teams pull upsets. There's no rule against
it. Right.
But I don't know where you would find Illinois upsetting anyone in the NCAA tournament over the years.
Yes. I mean, the only two higher seeds are Cincinnati in 04, which was a 5-4 game.
Yeah, we knew we were as good as
they
were.
And there was
better.
UNLV in 2011, which was an 8-9 game. We were the 9, UNLV was the 8. Those are the only two higher seeds.
Yeah, those aren't even upsets, really.
Right, yeah. 8-9 and 5-4.
So we've had, what, 30, 40 games in the NCAA tournament? And,
yes.
And never pulled an upset.
Correct.
What I would call an upset.
Yes. So that 86 team, I mean, 7 preseason, you're still... you know, maybe favorites in the Big Ten, if not, you know, picked in the top three of the Big Ten. This core that you've had together for years of Douglas and Winters and Altenberger is still together, although did Altenberger go into the season injured, or didn't he, like, play, like, 3 games or something like that, and then he...
5 games.
5 games. 5 mm-hmm. games and couldn't do it and shut it down and took a red shirt.
Yeah.
And then you did have... I guess you still had Welch, right?
Yeah, Anthony Welch is back, yes.
Yep. you had Welch, and you had that was the first year Ken Norman showed what he would be.
That is correct.
Guessing he would be the leading scorer. Do you have the?
Yeah, he was the leading scorer. He averaged 16-4.
Yeah,
and he made 216 baskets out of 337 shots. That's really good.
Yep, yep.
It's way over half.
Yep. Yeah, I remember. For some reason, I remember they played in the Hawaii tournament that wasn't the Maui Invitational. It was the other Hawaii tournament at the time. Lost to Oklahoma out there. So that was, you know, they were preseason number 7, lost to number 13 in the final of that tournament. Which I've heard stories about. Like, I'm guessing you didn't. Did the News Gazette send you to Hawaii for that? Oh yeah. I've heard stories that tournament was played in like.
I remember the,
like it, like 200 seats on the sideline, and that's it. It was like a little tiny gym,
but we were open in the open pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, like it, like in the like a hangar kind of kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yes,
in Honolulu. And I'm trying to think. Billy Tubbs. Was the coach at Oklahoma, and I did an interview him with the day before. He was really something else. They won that game 59-57. They were a good team, and they were ranked 13 at the time, and we were ranked 7.
Yeah.
But Illinois came out of that. Here's the thing that turned that season. They beat Minnesota easily in the first Big Ten game. They went to Iowa. Came home, played Iowa, lost 60-59, and then they lost 61-59 at Michigan State. Back to back at Michigan. Did I say Michigan State? At Michigan. Michigan was number 2 in the nation at that time.
Okay, 86 Michigan.
86 Michigan was number 2. They had a bunch of big guys. I just remember how I can still see the size of them. But in any case, they got off to a real bad start in the Big Ten and still finished 11-7. But never quite, you know, never got made a good run at it. And finished the season with a win over Minnesota, 73-64, and went into the tournament and lost the second game to Alabama, 58-56. Another really poor offensive effort by Illinois under pressure.
It seems there's a theme developing here.
Oh, there's a definite theme.
Yeah.
It's a historic theme.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so what are your memories of the expectations? I mean, number 7 preseason, the expectations were still sky high.
Look, the 80s belonged to the Illini. Well, that's the way we felt.
Yeah.
And every year was the same. I mean, we thought this might, you know, if everything would click, maybe this team would be a little better than number 10 in the nation or number 8 or 8 or 6 or whatever they were. Mm-hmm. You felt like you had a shot, but something we just didn't have the – I don't know what was lacking, but it just wasn't quite good enough. It comes down to some clutch games at the end of the season, and you got to pull them out.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a whole lot of things that go into that. It could be an injury, could be this, that, could be fouls in a game, could be any number of things. But Illinois was very much in the chase. We lost a 2-pointer. I looked it up one time on the number of losses by 2 and 3 points in the NCAA tournament. It's a bunch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at some point, that's got to turn around, right, Lauren? Like, at some point, well, it's just a whole bunch of – a big, long run of two-point wins.
When that happens, would you put it on my tombstone? I'd appreciate it.
I will. You got it. Yeah, so that – I guess the – I don't – my memory of that Alabama game is very – so was Wimp Sanderson, right? Was Wimp the coach?
That sure sounds right, but I'm not sure.
Didn't he like wear like a jacket? Like he always wear a tweed jacket or something?
I don't know.
Again, these are childhood memories for me. But yeah. So that my only recollection is of this, like, you know. So again, I'm a kid, so I don't have my fan emotions in yet. But 84, we should beat Kentucky, and it's close, and we lose. 85, felt like we should have beaten Georgia Tech and we lost. 86, 2-point loss when we can't shoot. You know, as a kid, I'm like, what, you know, at some point this will turn around, and, you know, had no idea what was coming the next year with, you know, probably the most disappointing loss of my lifetime. But do you think, so you, you just talked about 80s belong to Illini, and you talked about how like there was this like the team has never been here, and Henson has gotten us to this, and we're number two preseason in 85, and we're number seven preseason in 86. Was there any level of, hey, it's time to get over this hump and start getting there? Like, these tournaments are ending too disappointingly? I mean, similar to what we're going through right now, right?
But I don't know what you do about it. I mean, yes, there's a lot of feeling of disappointment every year, but when you get that far, I mean, you can't start over with a new coach. You got to go with what you got, and Lou just couldn't get over that hump.
Right. So then 87 is this kind of...
But by the way, we're building toward a wholly entirely different team. Mm-hmm. We're building toward a bunch of athletes.
Yes.
And when we start talking about Hamilton and Gill and Bardo and Nick Anderson and that, this is a different style. And the teams that we've been talking about are Douglas and Winters and Montgomery and Mintz and altogether different type of team.
Yes. So 86-87 was the transition, right? Like, so you lose Winters, Douglas graduated after 86. Mm-hmm. You do get Altenberger for one more year because he took a medical red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Mintz is gone. You didn't get anything from Jens Kujawa. You didn't get much. You didn't get anything from Olaf Blob. The whole, trying to be the team with seven-footers didn't really work out. So in 87, you basically have turned the entire team over to Kenny Norman, and he's an All-American. He's a second-team All-American this season.
He's really good.
Because of Austin Peay, I quote it to everybody I can. Like, Illinois fans remember 84, they remember 89, they remember 01, they remember 05, they remember 21. Nobody remembers that 87 should probably be up there in that, in the conversation with that, because you had a superstar and you had a bunch of pieces that seemed to be fitting as the tournament. Mm-hmm. So you have these freshmen come in, and you've got Nick Anderson now on the roster, and you've got Kendall Gill, and actually I think Bardo probably played the most of the freshmen there that year, didn't he? You've got it in front of you, but
he played 31 games. He averaged 3 points a game. He was a good defender. He could fill in. You didn't lose anything when you put him in. He just wasn't going to score much.
Right.
Weisinger developed that year as a playmaker.
Yep.
And Norman, as you said, and then Hamilton kind of played. He and Kujawa played together and for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the center position was okay, not great, but adequate. And Altenberger, of course, had the 3-point shot that year and then used it.
Yep. And so you had that. So that team was 14 preseason, right? So they're still. So what's that run? They were number two preseason, then they were number preseason, then they were number 14 preseason.
Yeah, and let's remember that all these selections are just somebody's guess.
Right.
But every year they were ranked in the top 15 or better, and every year it looked like they could make a run, and every year it was possible, but it just never happened.
Yep. And they went and beat they won at Pitt. I don't know why I remember that game, but I remember winning.
I remember
at
that Pitt. Game because I was at a banquet here. It must have been a football banquet.
Yeah. You didn't go to Pittsburgh for the game?
No, I remember we sent somebody else. I had to cover something here, and I just remember the score coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Illinois scored 99 points in that game.
Mm-hmm. And so this is the year we were talking about with that loss at Loyola that you were saying was a shot that went down after the buzzer.
Well, I guess that's right.
Is that the game? I have it here, December 27th, 86, 83-82 loss at Alumni Gym in Chicago to Loyola.
Yeah.
And then also lost at North Carolina. So they played at North Carolina, then Missouri and St. Louis, then at Loyola.
Well, that's what it says.
Yeah. Interesting. So they had climbed when they played that North Carolina game. Do you see if you remember that? So it's December 20th of 86, number four North Carolina against number five Illinois at the Dean Smith Center in Chapel Hill.
Well, they had a big center. What was his name? I can't remember his name. They had another. North Carolina always had extraordinary talent. I don't remember anything about the game really, other than we were not in. We couldn't keep up with them. I know that.
Yeah.
And they scored 90 points against Illinois and won 90-77. It kind of put us in our place. It was our first loss of the season. And, you know, and we should have gotten out of the Loyola game and didn't. And therefore, then we went in the Big Ten, won our first four games. I don't remember much about North Carolina, though, other than just a typical powerhouse North Carolina team and an All-American center. I remember that.
Oh, God, look at these names. So, let's see. That year they had Kenny Smith, J.R. Reed.
Uh-huh, that's the guy.
Uh-huh, J.R. Reed was their center. So let's see. This North Carolina had seven guys who ended up playing in the NBA.
Just seven?
Uh-huh. Jeff Lebo, Joe Wolf, Kenny Smith, J.R. Reed, Scott Williams, Steve Bucknall. That's a name I know. Dave Popson, I remember him. Yes, just your typical 80s North Carolina team.
What you're relating there makes it – Illinois just – no matter how good Illinois is, mm-hmm. North Carolina, Duke – under Krzyzewski, Kentucky, Kansas are always better.
Mm-hmm.
They're always a little bit. They always got more talent.
Yep.
But doesn't mean you can't beat them.
Yep.
But and Illinois has won a few of those games. But boy, it's a tall order when you're out. You know, you're basically outnumbered.
That's why the 0-1 Sweet 16 game was so big to me, because you know, Illinois is the 1 seed. Kansas is the 4 seed. You know, you're going into that game thinking, oh, God, here it comes, you know, kind of thing. And then Frank took over in the second half. And, you know, I think it was up 15 and Kansas cut it to 6. And then Frank just, you know, scored 10 of the next 12 points or whatever and put away Illinois 1 by 16. But, yeah, that was again, I'm the kid who's grown up with all these tournament losses and this and that and afraid of Kentucky and afraid of Kansas and afraid of Duke and afraid of North Carolina. And then 0-1, you go and you beat Kansas, and now you take on Arizona, and well, we'll get to that in a future review. So you go through, you got those two losses in December, you come in as you just went through that schedule. I hadn't remembered that. So there's a game January 14th of 87. Iowa was number 2, Illinois was number 8, and Iowa won in Champaign in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Who was Iowa that year? I don't remember. I have no recollection of how Iowa would have climbed to 2. Is that Roy Mark? Like who's there? And here, I'll pull it up. That's what I'll do. We'll just do this live. Yeah, it was Roy Marble. Roy Marble, B.J. Armstrong, Brad Lowhouse, Ed Horton. I remember that team.
Ed Horton from Springfield. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Everybody's scoring basically 13 points a game, 11 points a game, 11 points a game, 11 points a game.
B.J. Armstrong is considered one of the great players in Iowa history.
Yeah, I had forgotten that 87, they climbed all the way up to number 2 in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, now I got to find out what happened to Iowa that year. Oh, they were ranked number 1 at some point? They climbed all the way to number 1 on January 19th that year, so right after beating Illinois. They moved to number 1. Then they lost to UNLV in the Elite Eight. They beat Oklahoma in overtime in the Sweet 16, but then lost to UNLV, and UNLV went to the 87 Final Four. Okay, so we've been building up to it. Ken Norman's good. Who was Big Ten Player of the Year that year? I wonder if – was it Ken Norman? I don't remember.
No.
No, he did not win it. I'll have to look that up. I should have had that pulled up on one of these pages here.
The thing that happened in 87 was that we're playing Indiana at home,
mm-hmm.
and the score is tied. Illinois went ahead by 2, and Knight elected to let the star guard.
Was that Damon Bailey year?
No. Oh, man, former Iowa coach.
Steve Alford.
Steve Alford, mm-hmm. should go for a 3, and he missed, and Illinois won the game 69-67. That was the last loss for Indiana that season. They won the Big Ten. They won the national championship.
Uh-huh.
They went on. But Illinois went on to beat Ohio State, Indiana, Michigan, and Michigan State the last 4 games.
Yep.
And so this is a pretty good Illinois team. We play Austin Peay, and son of a gun, that big guy just killed us. Yep. I don't remember his name, but he was an awfully good player in that game. Hit a big corner three to win the game. But Illinois, Lou called timeout, score 67-68. We're 1 point behind. Called timeout with just barely a second or two to go. Called timeout at half, threw the ball to half court and called time. And then threw the ball down to Kenny Norman on the free throw line, wide open 15-foot shot, hit the back of the rim and came off.
Which Ken Norman, if you don't know who, like he never missed a 12-foot jumper in his life. Like he would hit that same shot over and over.
I know.
That's how he was so good. He scored 20 a game that year, right?
He scored that season. He scored 20.7.
Yeah, 20.7 points a game. Absolute machine. Second team All-American. You get everything you want. You have the scare.
How good was he? He shot 176 free throws. When you're drawing free throws, you're a player.
Yep. Yep. And
had 303 rebounds. He was really good.
Yep. Yeah, that's
maybe the most underrated player in Illinois history.
Uh-huh.
Pretty close.
The two hardest losses for me as a fan to get over, early losses, let's say. I mean, obviously it's hard to lose in the national title game in 05. It's hard to lose in the Elite Eight in 01. But the two, like, gut punch unbelievable losses were A, Austin Peay, and then B, Loyola 2 years ago.
Well, you're missing Villanova.
So why is Villanova up there for you?
Because Illinois was really good in 88 and had a 10-point lead late in the game. Late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And Gill and Bardo and everybody, just Nick, all walked up and missed free throws. Missed them in pairs.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't believe it. Some little guy that was off, came, you know, they had guys foul out for Villanova. Some little guy came in that hadn't played all year, hit a dead open three from the corner, and that was it. Illinois got beat.
Yep.
66-63, horrible loss. Just horrible. I mean, it was a game they had in the bag and just let get away, because every game that you play that's fairly close, you got to make free throws at the end. They're going to foul you.
Yep.
It's a simple thing. If you can't make your free throws, you can't win, because that's all you're going to be shooting at the end of the game.
Yep.
And this was a game that they lost after they'd won. Let me look at this. They'd won 8 of the previous 9 games in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
They're ranked number 16 in the nation. They had fallen to that and because of earlier losses, but they seem to be back on, you know, they beat San Antonio pretty easy, 81-72, and then let this game get away. And I think that they had a chance to go a lot further that year. But
mm-hmm.
So I think this is just like the loss to Austin Peay, and really a different opponent, but the kind of game that if you get past that, maybe you could get a run going. You keep thinking that's going to happen because the team's good enough to do that.
Which is why I was so convinced this year after you play as bad as you played against Chattanooga and won the game somehow, and Malachi Smith missed that last jumper, and you somehow survived the worst game you've played all year. That's why I was convinced, like, okay, there it is. There's the turning point. We've had all these bad losses. Now that's a bad loss for Chattanooga. Look out, Houston. We're about to put it together. Look out, you know. And
problem is this: Houston's better than us.
Yes, yes.
That was the
however, one. However, there was one issue with that entire line of thinking.
And did you see where they're ranked this coming year?
Yeah,
they're up in the top 10 again.
Yes,
maybe top 5.
Well, I mean, those two guys that were injured out for
the
year are
back,
and
they're loaded.
Yep, yep. Okay, so let's put a cap on this with this.
Okay.
Who would you say of this era? So we're talking 83 season to 87 season. Who was the top player to you during that era?
Ken Norman.
Yeah. Would you put Douglas number 2 behind him? Or, I mean, I would say the same. Ken Norman remains my favorite player of all
time. Well, Harper wasn't around very long in that era. I mean, he played only 1 year.
Yep.
Harper was a better player than Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just much faster, much better offensively, much, as you saw in the NBA. I mean, Harper was a real NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
He guarded Magic. He could score. Do you know that Harper had an unusual record that his scoring average went up for like 8 consecutive years,
mm-hmm.
just as it did at Illinois? He didn't score much. Then he scored better as a sophomore. Then he scored 15, 16 points a game as a junior. Then he goes in. Right, the NBA took him for a reason because he was really good. And I would say Norman and Harper, from an Illinois standpoint, those are the 1-2 players. Yeah. Then I think probably Bruce Douglas. Bruce Douglas had a, I mean, I don't have his career assists and his career steals, but I think he leads the team in history. I think he leads. He's the number one in those two categories, isn't he?
I think so. Did someone pass him in assists? I know he wasn't steals.
Maybe per game they might have passed him, but Deron Williams didn't play the 4 years the way that that Douglas did.
Yes,
and Douglas was good right from the beginning, and Deron Williams was okay as a freshman, and then got better and better and better.
Yes,
but Bruce was one of these guys that was just real solid right from the start. But if you look at his senior year. And I don't know if I can do this or not. Let's see, Douglas, in 1985, he averaged 7.9 points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were backing off of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember that happening. I remember a defender standing on the free throw line and daring him to shoot, and he didn't want to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just bringing that up because he wasn't the perfect player, but he averaged 8.8 points as a senior.
Mm-hmm.
So when you try to rank Douglas over some of the other guys, he kind of leveled off as a scorer.
Yeah.
But he was awfully good. He got the ball to his teammates, and he set them up, and he had a lot of steals, and he was really good defensively.
Okay. So if there was a tournament, like a round-robin tournament between those five teams, you know, I'm guessing 84 and 87 are the two – are the top two teams?
Probably would be.
So,
which team is going to play under pressure, and which one's going to choke?
Because if you had 84 playing 87, what? I mean, it's hard to say because you know it's like Doug Altenberger's on both teams.
Well,
but,
I would.
You know, like which was the better team?
I would probably take the 84 team. I probably would.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that Weisinger was. He was a good player, but I don't know that he was. On a par with Harper and Harper wasn't on that team in 80. Which was it?
83 was 80, Harper. Yeah, 84.
You know, 84 was.
Yeah.
Was Doug. I would say that the 84 team was probably deserving. I'd give them the edge, but it would just depend on the night, and who was shooting and who's hitting.
Now here's a very hard question because
The center position on 87, by the way, was alternating. A Kujawa and a young Hamilton. Okay, but it wasn't as good as Montgomery and Winters.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yes.
Norman's better than any of them, though.
Is there a player we've talked about that you would say is like underrated historically on all of these teams? Like, you know, if we were doing it for the most recent era, like, you know, a lot of current Atlanta fans will say Andre Feliz is like, you know, no one remembers, like, he took over some of those games. Mm-hmm. If he had a stage like the, you know, and it, like maybe even had a few more years or something, he would be remembered differently than, you know, people mostly talk about Io and Kofi and that. Is there any player in that era 83 to 87 who sticks out to you as, you know, who was really good and doesn't get credit for? For me, it's Anthony Welch because, I don't know, again, I'm a kid and
Altenberger.
Yeah, just because of his shooting.
But he was awfully good defensively. Altenberger would very often take the toughest guard or the toughest guy on the other team unless it was a big man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think Anthony was probably a little underrated, but I don't think he was a great player either.
Mm-hmm.
I like Altenberger over him, but Altenberger, by the way, in that first year that the three-point shot was in, hit 76 of 160. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
76 baskets out of 160 shots from the three-point line.
That's 87, you're saying?
That's 87. That was the first year of the three-point shot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wasn't there a year when it was being experimented?
Yes,
like
it was being
used
it
for just Big Ten games and like
there was a lot of experimenting going on.
Yeah, and you go to a preseason tournament in Hawaii.
The distance and everything. They were fooling around with all kinds of stuff. But 87, it became a permanent thing, and that was the year that basically he was the only one Lou let shoot it. Now Weisinger shot. Let's see, Hamilton shot. Hamilton shot none. Weisinger shot 60 times, and nobody else took more than 15 for the entire season. Lou had the clamps on. He didn't like it, and Knight didn't like it, and I don't think Katie liked it.
Yeah.
But
that's funny.
Yeah. They were limiting.
That's funny. Okay, final question. When you think of this era, my question is, what's the defining moment?
Great expectations and disappointment.
That has to be it, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, every year you think,
yep.
Not that they didn't have good seasons, not that there wasn't a lot of excitement during the season, just like the last year. A lot of excitement. Okay. Won the Big Ten championship.
Yep.
Wonderful. And then boom.
Yep. Yep.
You've knocked out of the Big Ten tournament this year and knocked right out of the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
And, you know, if you could go back and look at the record of our golf team, our baseball team, our softball team, and tennis, and look at what they did in tournaments, ooh.
Yeah. 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 It's funny.
Like, I mean, it's almost a complete wipeout.
So which was 83, what was the law? That was Utah? Yeah. 83 was Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So the run of these 5 years is Utah, then Kentucky at Kentucky, then Georgia Tech, then Alabama, then Austin Peay.
And I'm going to give you those points again because this is what they scored 49 against Utah and lost. They scored 51 against Kentucky and lost. They scored 53 against Georgia Tech. They scored 56 against Alabama. And then they got 67. That's the only time they got out of the 50s in those five tournament losses.
Mm-hmm.
And that was against Austin Peay, which wasn't a great defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
But still, Illinois got outshot in that game,
68-67. Yep. Well, too bad we have to stop at 87 because, you know, 89 is coming.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
But.
And even then, there's a certain disappointment. And number one, Hamilton's hurt.
Yeah.
Number two, you lose to a Michigan team that you had just splintered during the course of the season.
Michigan.
Beat Michigan at home 96-84, won at Michigan in the final game of the regular season 89-73.
Mm-hmm.
Two out of three, it's hard to win the third one.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't.
Yep. I still remember that. I hate that it's burned into my memory. There was that clip from the Michigan locker room when they got to the Final Four, and I don't believe Illinois and Syracuse had played yet. So Schembechler comes in to talk to the basketball team and gives them the, you know, great job, guys. We're going to the Final Four, and I want Illinois. And, I hated Bo Schembechler. Like, you know, I had such hate. And so for this guy to get to celebrate that win in 89, that's – There's a lot of hard
You got to be a Michigan man to coach Michigan.
Well, right? You could be a Michigan man Illinois.
Fisher was a Michigan man. He was sitting there, and Frieder decided he was going to go to Iowa State, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as he decided he was going to take the Iowa State job, Schembechler says, "You're not coaching Michigan then."
Mm-hmm.
Booted him out. And the guy, Fisher, wins the national championship as an interim coach.
Unbelievable. Someday, Lauren, it'll happen. It'll happen while you're still around. How about next year? We'll be like a 9 seed and go on a crazy run.
Well, I think that...
And make up for all these bad tournament losses.
It'll be a different team. We won't be built around a center. But the one thing I will tell you, and I could be corrected on this, Shannon might come back for 2 years. But if Shannon doesn't come back, and Mayer, of course, will be in his final year, you almost have to rebuild again, maybe.
Yeah.
At least at those positions, you got plenty of guards.
Yep.
But you've got Rodgers coming on in a wing.
Right.
But the wings might not be as good as they're going to be this year.
Mm-hmm. It's funny to look at how, like, you know, we've just talked through this. You know, Altenberger was there all 5 years of what we talked through, and Welch had a red shirt year, and so he, you know,
both of them did. Yeah.
We're talking about all these guys through all these years.
Yeah.
And it's now it's just like, oh, who's your new team next year? Well, who's going to leave? Who's going to come
there
in?
There was a time when Bruce Douglas and Ephraim Winters played, back in that era when Altenberger played, where the name on the jersey was the most important thing. Mm-hmm. Now the most important thing is NIL. And every single player, almost to a man, would rather be somewhere else than where they are right now. Wherever they are, they'd rather be someplace else. Mm-hmm. And that's very disappointing to me because, you know, if you'd think loyalty would be more important, but it isn't.
Yes. Yes. It's weird for me as, you know, since I write as a fan, it's weird for me. I always just kind of assume that players feel about the program like I feel about the program and are living and dying with it. And yes, I mean, you know, more power to them. They can, you know, if someone chooses to leave and has a better opportunity and can further their career, I get it. It's just changed, you know, what the sport looks like.
And it's, and the recruiting is so much different with all these offering so many more players than they used to. And then it all comes down to who's going to pay me the most.
Yeah, yeah. To where Miami boosters are bragging about the offers that they're giving to Nigel Peck from, you know, like, hey, we landed him for a 2-year deal worth this much. It's like, yes, it's amazing how much the world has changed. Well, thank you. I appreciate you letting me coming over here and bug you. And we'll have to have an era that comes up where all these close games go our way.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.